The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held at Waits Lake Bible Camp near Valley, Washington, on October 19 and 20, 2023.
So this whole thing went to the Supreme Court, but the public opinion was sympathetic to the Amish people because it had been generated somewhere else, but it really did become a factor in the decision, because the Supreme Court justices are supposed to be politically neutral, and I'm not saying they weren't, but the prosecution was really at a disadvantage because public opinion was not in their favor, and Supreme Court ruled in the Amish favor, and today we are here. We have textbooks being printed, Bible-based. We have a whole network of schools that did not exist. And can we be thankful enough and grateful enough that we can have, we look around the world and we talk about how bad things are becoming, you know, and it is not good. But here we are in this little island, protected, and have the chance to teach our children from Bible-based material. I can't, somehow I think that we never want to lose the sense of gratefulness for that and that we have. So now we're thinking about Kingdom Kindergarten. You know, kindergarten is, we think of kindergarten as a school before they actually get into school. So is the school something that contributes to the work of the kingdom, church life? And when I use the word church life, I am not using it narrowly, maybe sometimes within a context, but because everything ends up local. But I'm thinking also the broad kingdom work and then the individual congregations. And so does it impact that? Well, our progenitors thought so. In fact, one of the significant things, as I understand it, in colonial America, you know, there was a time that public school was not compulsory. But as all thinking cultures do, they soon got had public school put together. But before that, one of the things the Anabaptists did, they assumed when they had a community, they had a school. Why? They wanted their children to read the Bible. And they were unique in that way, as I understand, that was something that you could expect. So does it affect the church? Does the way our children think and the worldview they get by the time they're 16, the way they problem solve, does that happen aside from school, or does the school lend to that? Well, I think we know that definitely the school affects the church. Just a simple example. Were you ever in a congregation that the singing was just good? And you think, where did it come from? Did that school have a school program that had music teachers that didn't know how to sing? No, they learned it at school. And it affected the whole singing of the church. And that's just one thing that you can measure very quickly, very easily. But it does affect. And so absolutely. To get all this done, though, it is important that we must have a goal and a mission. See, when school started, they had an absolutely definite mission. And I'm not saying we don't here. I want to fan the flames. That we have a vision of what we want, and we have to have goals, and there should be some benchmarks. Are we getting it done? And so there's more, we have our schools for more reasons than just to not go to public school. I would like to think that if there was, the government would not demand that we go to school, that we'd have this exact same gathering. Because we believe what it does for our students. And we have the vision for what it does for our students, and that we would do that. Now, I want to just think of it quickly in two parts. First, one of it is, what are the goals for our schools? And I'm going to use the word goal and mission kind of interchangeably. All right, so if I say one or the other, that I'm still meaning essentially the same thing. And then also, so I want to look at it in two parts. The one is, we're looking for our schools for academic excellence. And the other part that we're looking to the schools to help do is Bible-based life skills. So when we think of academic excellence, and how does this tie into, what I want to do is stir up your minds. I am hoping that you think of things far more than what I say. I would like you to go to Ray and come to me and say, you should have said that yet, and that, because what I really want to do is prompt your thinking. So what is our mission? What do we want to do at school so it affects our children in church life and for kingdom work, that their mentality is kingdom work? What can we do for that? Well, one of the first things that is going to have to happen on the academic side is we're going to have to be teaching the basic skills of math, English, spelling, science, the basic skills. We're going to be needing to teach academics. Now, with teaching them, you know, it's you can't just put it in their head. Somehow, this whole concept of teaching is an art, really, isn't it? Because some people learn one way, some the other way. Some are cerebral, some think by pictures. And so the teacher is faced with how to convey this message, how to convey this information to the way this student can actually learn. So that's one of the things that when I'm talking about academics. But I also purposely use the word excellence. The Bible says whatever thy hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And I think that our students should be expecting, parents should be expecting, and we should be, as a school, delivering an academic excellence, not just to get them pushed through and on to other things. Part of all of that is learning how to learn. Because what they learn in school is basic. Remember, I said basic skills. But they're going to have to learn how to learn other things. They're going to encounter brand new things. And they're going to have a base of how to actually learn these things. So that is part of what goes into this. Now, we could talk about, and it'd be interesting to have a discussion about, well, how do you do that? Well, but I'm pointing that out that, okay, that I think is one of the things that should be happening in kindergarten, in church, in school, so that when they're studying their Bibles, when they're older and as Christians, that they know how to study and know how to learn. That they aren't just used to being fed. I think this fits in. Maybe it's because it's on my mind, but just a little bit of some science that I'd run across here recently on the value of parents reading to their children, starting as infants. In fact, you could even read Shakespeare to them, and it has the same effect. But what they did, they were able to image the brain. And so what they did is they read stories to the children, and there was that particular part in their brain lit up. But when they read stories to them and then pointed to the pictures, you know how you do to preschoolers, you know, you get them to say, what is this? This is a dog. This is a cat. When they did that, that area lit up a lot more. Then what they did next was they took a screen, whatever it was, but they just call it screen time, and they left them watch whatever video it was, and that area flatlined. Okay, they were no longer using their imagination. they were now being fed. We don't want our brains to flatline, okay? And so that's one of the things we're trying to do, is teaching them to learn, and also, along with that, the joy of learning, the joy of discovery. And I think that that has to do some with the teachers. If teachers are enthusiastic about learning, and they say, hey, look at this, I learned this, isn't this interesting? It could be extracurricular things, but they will instill that. But if administrators and parents don't encourage that as well, it's going to be kind of a hard pull if administrators and parents are just thinking this is a necessary evil. But what we want them to learn is the joy of learning and the joy of discovery, so that when they get older, that is their background, that is their view, that is how they think. The other thing is problem solve. I asked somebody some time ago who is in the professions, and I said to him, Ed, when did public schools stop teaching critical thinking? He was right like that. He said when they took the reading problems out of math. Now, in my generation, we called them reading problems. I don't know what the right word is today. But when you read a problem, you got to figure out what it is. He said they took that out of math, and that really apparently impacted critical thinking. Learning, and I call that problem solving. You know, there's way too many people just, I don't know, it's above my pay grade, I don't know what to do, it's somebody else's problem. No, you're teaching people to problem solve, to think their way through. That's another thing that we're here for, to teach. Another one that is important that we're teaching so that it impacts is history. Now, I think it's more than just because I like history, that I think that history is important, because children seem to think that nothing important happened until they were born. It was only then that things really began to work and move, okay? And that's children, okay. But they tend to think that they're the first generation to ever arrive here, and if not, at least of consequence. So let's teach them the sense of proportion, the big picture. I think it's important for them to learn U.S. history. I think it's important for them to learn world history. I think it's very important for them to learn church history. They need to realize how things have changed through the centuries and how this worked together and how it impacted the church and how it in various ways of how the political scene impacted. And I think that it's important that they learn this history, and through that to learn to appreciate the work of their progenitors, those that their grandparents or great-grandparents. And you know, it's surprising how soon we can't even name our great-great-great-grandparents. And yet, if it wouldn't be for them, this crowd would probably look different. You know, there's a sense in which we're just a little dot, and yet you make a real impact on the next generation. History, to me, is important because it helps each person. I think it helps to guide them in their life skills, and it helps them to take the long view, and also of understanding that there's other cultures, other peoples in the world. How would you, let's say we send somebody off on what we like to talk about as mission work, and they arrive somewhere, and they are totally paralyzed. They never knew that people live different than them. They would have a whole learning process to go through. It's bad enough the way it is. But they have, if they think that all the world is like them, or all the world has to be like them, you see what a disadvantage that puts them at? They don't have a sense of proportion. They don't have a sense of the long view of humanity and the peoples of the world. Also, we want to teach them in school to be a contribution, to be a giver, not a getter. I don't know if I'm using right English here. I'm talking to people but my point is that there are way too many people who are they want to just get things, and they don't have as part of their thinking process to give. And so those things, they can learn those things in school. You have in this kindergarten, that throughout school, if you have the culture that way, that they are doing that, we can more readily teach them for that. Now, so I want to just note this, that this is a little bit ragged around the edges here. I can hardly divide exactly. Well, this is totally academic and this is totally life skills. So, but I want to look now at some life skills, and I think that it also, I might repeat myself a bit here, but we're teaching them academics, but you can hardly teach them academics without life skills as well. For instance, how are you going to teach math if everybody just talks and doesn't pay attention to you? It is basically, it's just matter in motion and it's chaos. Are they going to go home and know much? No, they're going to go home, everybody's frustrated, okay? So life skills goes along with it. There's certain ways that, and certain things that they need to learn at school that they will take with them. That's a very, very important part of their life. So what I think of first is respect. We could also call it obedience, but I'm thinking of one of the first things that we want to be making sure that we're getting done in our schools to make them, to develop character, is to respect authority. That they have to learn early in life, because you know how two-year-olds are. They think they're the king and all the world is their court. Everything revolves around them. And they'll keep thinking that unless you get it out of their heads. And they have to realize that they are not the center of attention, and that they are not going to be the one setting the pace. And so they're going to have to learn to respect authority. Now, we'd say, well, that they should come from home. And it's true. And I think it's important that when we have respect issues, that we don't immediately blame the home. The school is here to work on school problems. And if there are home problems, the ministry needs to be working on that. But don't try to fix it at school, okay? But nevertheless, the children need to be respecting authority, be respecting the teacher. That is crucial if we're going to have an atmosphere that they can learn. They need to respect authority. They need to obey. They need to respect other people. Other students, other children, other people have rights. There are boundaries. They need to respect their property. They are not just free to, in my mind, just look in each other's desks or open another's lunchbox. That's their property. And the teachers and the board and the ministry are here to make sure that they are learning to respect other people, other people's property as well. Also that they play by the rules. Here I'm thinking more recess, I guess. I knew of someone that he did not get along very well with other people. Extremely smart, friends and foe alike agreed that he was a genius. Remember, I said his foes did too. But he was the kind of person that if it didn't suit him, if he was playing baseball, he would take your bat and your ball and go home. Well, he hadn't learned. Now, I don't know if he actually did that, but I used to say that that's how he does. They have to learn to play by the rules. It's not their rules. They're not going to make their own rules for whatever the game is. Recess time really is a time of learning. They have to be learning how to work together as a team. They have to be learning that it's not all about them. We win as a team. We win. We don't win just one person. They play by the rules. They cannot fudge the rules. You need to call them out on it because they will think other things aren't important. They will think it doesn't matter how I drive because I got away with it up to this point. It has to be part of their mentality that they play by the rules. These are life skills that go with them. If they go through school and they have this whole thing that it's that they can not, that they can actually fudge the rules and they don't get called out on it, that will become part of their thinking processes. And as long as we have the endemic nature, and that's as long as we live here, we're going. That will be the tendency. So don't be shocked, but just be ready for it. You're teaching life skills. And administrators, parents, don't be so shocked by it. Sometimes, people are, they just can't believe their child would do that. Well, our children embarrass us. They have the endemic nature. They're carnal. But we want to teach them habits. Remember, the life skill thing. You want to teach them habits because it becomes a part of the way they think. Another one is kindness. Even when they're playing, I think it's important that they get called out if they play too rough. And other things, whether it's the way they talk, what they do to each other, the way they think. It's, don't put up with name calling, don't put up with gossip, don't put up with this just inclusive thing that there's just a few friends. And if one of those friends is friends, let me back up and say it this way. Sometimes you have this little clique of people, and this even happens to adults, unfortunately, that you must have the same enemies that I do. I will not be your friend. And the Bible doesn't teach that. Okay, so we have to watch for that in school to call it out because it becomes a culture. This is part of life skills. This will go with them. This will go with them, and it will become a part of the way they think. Now, another thing that is maybe is closely related is this whole idea of being fair. Now, most of the time, you will hear students complain that others are not fair. You rarely have somebody come to the principal's office and say, I wasn't fair, and I'm upset that I wasn't fair. It doesn't work that way. My teacher wasn't fair, the principal wasn't fair, the school board isn't fair, the ministry supports an unfair school board, on and on and on. And even parents get caught in that. Children, number one, need to learn to be fair. They themselves. It doesn't hurt that when, I guess a little personal story. Yeah, I think one of the things that we learned early on is that if we came home and reported somebody, one of the first things our mother would say, well, and what did you do? And so it was really kind of a counterproductive thing, and I've never forgotten it. And we need to teach them to be fair with other people. And I think along with that, we need to teach them that life is not fair. You must be as fair as you can, but you have to also realize that as long as we live in the fallen world, there are some things that just don't balance. And there's some things that just aren't fair. And we have to help them think that. But, as Christians, we know that what makes up that gap is the Bible teaches that God gives more grace. He gives enabling grace. Because life isn't always fair. There's things that happen. I can't explain, why does a 3-year-old child get cancer? One of the things that is probably, if I think I have it tough sometimes in my work, I get into some children's hospitals, and here would be these little people in wagons or what else with an IV pole, 2 or 3 years old. They didn't do anything. They didn't deserve this. This is all part of the fall, but it's unfair. So you're going to have that and teach them that life isn't always fair, and they're going to have to learn to accept that and go on. You see, we tend to think that if justice is served, we'll feel better. Not necessarily. It's the forgiving spirit that makes you feel better, not justice. God takes care of that. Teach them a forgiving spirit. That is crucial. I've read already about just an example of that is that, too often, someone kills somebody else and then the murderer is sentenced to death. Now, we don't see this very often, but I read already that, some of the family members of the person who had been killed want to be at the execution. because they want to see justice served. And from what I've read, the majority say, you know what, it didn't do a thing. It was when we forgave that we could do, that it helped, but not watching justice served. So that's a life skill. That is a mentality. And that is something that we want to help children do now. You need the teacher. We're not talking about just letting things go. But on the other hand, life will not always be fair. Teach them to get over it and move on. Another thing that you want to watch for is some people have an entitled mentality that the world owes them. The teacher must help them. The others must give them things. They have an entitled, and closely related to that is the victim mentality, that, well, I can't help it. All this happened to me, and now I'm acting this way because I have been injured. I find that mentality one of the most difficult to work with, because they can only operate if they're injured. And almost invariably, they will even find what the person who is trying to help them, they will find fault with them because you've now injured me, now you owe me. And it is very difficult unless that to help a person until they are ready to not take up that mentality. So if your children get to whining and feeling like, well, they've been mistreated and so therefore they can be angry, they've been mistreated and therefore they can be grumpy today, we're letting them help to develop that victim mentality that others are responsible for how I feel. And that's a life skill. And if children learn that and it works for them, they'll keep on doing it throughout life. Now, I know the school can't teach everything, but this is part of what we do. You know, if you'd be in public school, they would feed that spirit. We want to feed the other spirit. We want to feed something else. Now, when children work together, one of the big advantages of institutional school versus, say, homeschooling, is you interact with other people. And I'm very much for, I know there's cases of homeschooling, but that's not my subject. We're talking about institutional schools, but teach them to accept others. They're always going to find people that they think are a little odd. And if they know it, other people think they are too. But that's not what we need to. They're always going to run into people that they think are difficult. They're odd. They do funny things. And they'd be easier to get along with if they do it different. And they might be right. That really doesn't matter. You have to, what's important is they learn to accept others for who they are. You know, I think when the Bible says that when we call someone a fool, we're in danger of hellfire, I think what we have there is that person is created by God. And when we call one of God's creation a fool, see, you're reflecting on the Maker. Let's teach people to be accepting, because God made them as well. Accepting of what? Well, everybody's going to make mistakes. Everybody's going to make unusual mistakes. Sometimes it'll actually hurt other people. Some of these people come from other backgrounds, and you don't even have any idea that they're hurting somebody else's feelings. You know, from culture to culture, there's such a gap sometimes. And even it's surprising within Anabaptist circles. Some families do it this way, some that way. We need to learn to accept each other. And I'm not saying accepting things that are absolutely wrong, but I'm saying accepting of various things. It's not the student's job to fix everything. We have teachers and school boards and ministry that work at that, and even they don't always get it fixed, but they work at it. But it's not the student's job to fix fellow students. You teach them to accept, because there's going to be other backgrounds as well. And another thing help them to accept is their own mistakes. Some are poor losers. It's just as important to teach them to be a good loser as it is a good winner. You know, sometimes we talk about, you know, let's make sure they don't get a big head because they're on the winning team. Well, that's true enough. but you also want to help them to be able to lose with dignity and not be all sore about it and out of sorts and grumpy. So they have to even be able to accept their own mistakes. These are life skills. And also we provide what I call a moral compass, you know, the right and wrong. Now, how are we going to do all this? I don't want to bore you with going over time here, but I do want to talk about a few things with how are we going to do this? I have some principles that I feel need to be present. And the first one is, now I don't have these all in order of importance except this one that I feel is probably foundational. And that is this: the entire team needs to be working together. And I'm thinking when I say that, I look at the team as being the parents, the teacher, the school board, the ministry of the church are all on the team because they all have skin in the game. That it's important to each one of those that these students learn these both academics and life skill. And you need to be together on it. Always, you know, and even on the team there can be some differences of how we do things. But I think that it's important to get along. It's important to agree even before you reach, make compromises to get along even before you reach perfection. If you have a divided administrative team, it's all over but the shouting. The students pick it up, parents get discouraged, and it is really hard to put it back together. So work hard at getting along. Remember, sometimes we may be just as hard to get along with as the other person, even though that would be hard to think of. Another thing is that we have the same values and goals and the same mission in mind. Now, this is where we want to go with it. And, you know, a lot of companies have a mission statement. And, you know, if I would ask any one of you, what is the mission of the school? What are the goals? Where do you really want to take this? Where should it go? What would we say? I think it's good to talk about that some, but the administrative team really needs to be together enough that they agree on that. For instance, you know, some of the little things that come up on that is, you know, the amount of how hard are you going to push the students, how much homework, just, you know, what kind of behavior is acceptable. All of that plays into it. But they need to be together. Now, let's look at the teacher. The teacher's there every day. The teacher is, as we say, boots on the ground. Now, there's both an advantage and a disadvantage. The advantage is that the teacher sees what's happening day after day after day. They're the ones that actually see it happen. And they see the patterns that are going on. Now, the disadvantage is that they might be so close to the tree they can't see the forest. But on the other hand, there's really, you know, they are the ones there. So it is, I think, important that the teacher is given specific guidelines. Let's make sure that the teacher knows what is expected. Don't 6 months later say, you know, we're just not very happy with the way we're running things. Well, what do you mean? Well, fix something. We just don't like it. You can't do that to teachers. They should know what's fairly well defined, what you're expecting in terms of the benchmarks. Where do you want them to be throughout the year? Academically, what kind of behavior is acceptable? And those things, that's what faculty meetings are for, to get our heads together and to see what's happening and where our goals are. But I do think it's important to pay attention to what the teacher is saying. And you can ask questions and find out what they are seeing by asking. Don't make it hard for the teacher to say what they think they're seeing. That can easily happen, that the teachers feel they aren't heard. And that varies. It varies from people to people, and it varies what they describe as being heard. Being heard, if I'm talking to you and I feel heard, it doesn't mean that you'll necessarily do what I think you should do. That isn't necessarily the definition of being heard. But it's that, yes, I understand what you're saying. But you see, because I'm the teacher, maybe I don't see everything else, okay? There's a broader spectrum going on. But they need to feel like their opinion is important. Keep on the lookout of what kind of culture there is. Is the culture toxic? You know, is there just a lot of... Are the students just... Maybe you never saw this in your home, that the children just get... They just get picky. They just get at each other. It's kind of a toxic... Maybe they're tired, or maybe they need to go work something, whatever it is. But, you know, and students can get that way. You can have this whole thing in school that they just are sort of at each other. I call that a toxic environment. You don't learn in a toxic environment because there's a lot of ill will, there's a lot of fear going on. And so it's important. I think a school should be both relaxed and scheduled, that they should get used to this is what happens next and it's scheduled, and yet at the same time, they're relaxed knowing that they are within the parameters. For instance, when I say that, let me give it by this. We do not expect a fifth grader to do, let's say, ninth grade algebra, do we? But the student needs to know that they are doing what we expect for a fifth grader. The teacher needs to know that they are doing what the board is looking for at this juncture. And so that all provides and works into the culture. And supporting the teacher is important. Now, does that mean teachers never make mistakes? What do we do with that? Teachers make mistakes. And sometimes people need to say they're sorry. But if the teacher has misstepped, and I don't mean in a big way, but here there's something that they made a wrong judgment call, or they tend to make wrong judgment calls on something, then let's bring it to the teacher's attention. But you never want to take the teacher down. You never want to make them feel so insufficient that it takes them, that they lose their confidence to stand up and teach. So you need to support the teacher because, see, the children have their own ideas of fairness, and life is not going to be fair. And they're going to have to learn that different teachers do things different ways, but it's okay. And so there's a lot of ways. And so when I say support the teacher, I don't mean just in a blanket way the teacher cannot do anything wrong. But that I think is a very rare thing. I think in general, the teacher needs to feel that the parents have their back and that the administration has their back. Ask the teacher their point of view and their concerns. All of this, if we're going to have, see, the teacher's the person on the ground, so if they're going to teach the life skills, they're the ones that you're going to have to work through, unless you plan to be there and be the teacher. You have to work through them and encourage them and guide them along the way. Help the teacher to teach the academics and to maintain the culture that you want. Help the teacher and the parents have a healthy relationship. And sometimes this gets delicate because when people's children get touched, some take it better than others, let's say it that way. But it usually can get pretty tense. But let's help the teachers and the parents, because for one thing, if the teacher is not feel safe to bring up some issue, and let's say either whether it's academics or whether it's life skills, who's the loser? The student, because it doesn't get corrected. And so let's make it easy. And I think here the ministry needs to be, you know, really close to it as well, because it's part of, like we say around our way, it's in your wheelhouse to help to facilitate that people are understanding each other and getting along and getting things done. And so help the teachers and they have a healthy relationship, that there's not the tension. And I say that because it's a problem. If it wouldn't be, we wouldn't have to talk about it. It's the natural course of things, and that there will be tension. So let's diffuse that as much as we can. If we're going to have the academics and the life skills the way we need to, we're going to have Bible-based and Bible teaching, because it's only there that they learn these life skills. And we teach them that there are absolutes, both in academics and in spiritual things. Which, that's kind of a sad state of affairs today. And I don't have to make much explanation about the absolutes and things that we thought a few years ago are actually absolute. But I saw a little bumper sticker the other day. It was on the back of a Prius. You know, those little cars. And it said, "I identify as a truck." He was absolutely no truck, trust me. But, you know, the people, you know, I think he made the point, and but there are absolutes. Now, one of the ways that is important that we teach, it's crucial that our students learn the Bible account of the creation and the Bible account of the flood. If you get those two wrong, you will be at sea spiritually. If we do not believe in the six-day creation, that the Creator did it this way, then everything else is going to be up for discussion. And if we don't believe in the flood, we will not be able to teach our children there's a judgment. Everything will be up for judgment in what I think and play by my rules. And so it is crucial that we get that through as part of the life skills. Instill in them the joy of working, that school is not a punishment, work is not a punishment. Adam and Eve were commanded to keep and dress the garden. That is part of the creation. Work is fulfilling. Learning in school, also helping others. And this group, you, each one of you, has an important role to play in every one of the students that you come in contact with, you're responsible for, because you are helping to frame their minds with the way they will interpret spiritual things, which are eternal lives, and it will affect their eternal destiny. And so my word is, this is a great work, but the Lord's on our side, and we never want to give up or slack up. So the Lord bless each one of you as you continue on in the work of the kingdom. Thank you.